some of the components that are in this regulation are, they really don't make any sense.
An effort to repeal an onerous regulation aimed at commercial fishing boats. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, November 28th. Good evening, I'm Annie Feit. Also tonight, Amazon Prime gains popularity in rural Alaska with one main selling point, free shipping.
Got my knife out, made a tiny split in it, and all of a sudden I had an instant California king-size mattress that exploded in my face.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Alaska laborers Local 71 and the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities ask you to slow down in construction zones while they work to keep roads safe. Alaska laborers Local 71, working hard for Alaska. This message is sponsored by Alaska laborers Local 71.
Federal lawmakers return to Washington next week for the final days of the 113th Congress. They have to pass a budget or a continuing resolution by December 11th to avoid a government shutdown. Alaska's fishing industry is watching another deadline approach, December 18th. As APRN's Liz Ruskin reports, that's the date tough new EPA regulations apply to commercial fishing boats, unless Congress intervenes.
United Fishermen of Alaska and other industry groups have been trying for years to get a permanent exemption to part of the Clean Water Act that regulates what small vessels discharge. UFA Executive Director Julianne Curry says the pending new regulations would apply to just about any liquid emitted from a commercial boat shorter than 79 feet.
Some of the components that are in this regulation are, they really don't make any sense.
If the rule goes into effect, the EPA estimates it would apply to as many as 138,000 smaller vessels around the country, and about half of them are commercial fishing boats. The regulation would apply to, among other liquids, fish hold effluent, bilge water, gray water, and, Curry points out, deck wash, even runoff.
It includes onerous regulations such as making fishermen catalog and make sure that their permit is covering rainwater that falls onto the deck and then therefore falls overboard.
A study by the EPA found some of these discharges may be harmful to the aquatic environment or to human health, particularly in enclosed waters. Curry says UFA embraces appropriate regulation and doesn't object to reasonable pollution controls.
The fishing industry is already covered under discharge regulations that just aren't as overly onerous as the ones that are potentially going to be implemented come December.
The EPA wasn't eager to adopt these regulations in the first place. It used to have an exemption for discharges that occur in the normal operation of a vessel. But an environmental lawsuit aimed at keeping invasive species from hitching a ride in a ship's ballast water forced the EPA to act. Congress has passed temporary measures to keep the regulation at bay since 2008. The U.S. House has already passed a bill calling for a permanent exemption for vessels under 79 feet. Several bills are pending in the Senate that would halt the regulation for a year or permanently. They're sponsored by Alaska's senators and senators as divergent as California Democrat Barbara Boxer and Florida Republican Marco Rubio. In Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Governor Sean Parnell has just a few more days on the job. Parnell has been Alaska's governor a little over 5 years. He was sworn into office on July 26, 2009, after Sarah Palin resigned earlier that month. Parnell says he doesn't know what's next for him, but he expects to keep working on the issues his administration prioritized.
Whether it's resources and energy, whether it's the domestic violence, public safety arena, you'll likely see me continue to engage in those areas. Those reflect my heart, my passion for Alaskans, and I'll look for ways to continue that service.
Parnell lost to Governor-elect Bill Walker in a close race. The candidates were separated by about 6,000 votes. But he says he doesn't want to look back and consider what might have cost him the election. Parnell says he's looking forward to spending time with his first grandchild, a boy named Rowan, who was born November 18th.
You know, when the world goes upside down and inside out, All you have to do is hold a newborn, and everything is made all right. And that's been my experience. It just puts life back into perspective and makes you thankful for everything that you are and everything you have. And that's really how I leave office. That's how Sandy leaves as First Lady, is we are so thankful for the opportunity to have served.
Governor-elect Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor-elect Byron Mallott will be sworn into office Monday morning at Juneau's Centennial Hall. The public inauguration ceremony begins at 11:30 and is expected to last about an hour. There will be seating available in the main ballroom for nearly 1,000 people. Alaska Airlines is adding extra anchorage to Juneau flight Monday morning to accommodate inauguration traffic. Lindsay Hobson is Walker's daughter and a campaign spokeswoman.
This is the first time in state history where we have had both an Alaskan-born governor and lieutenant governor serving together. You know, I think there's going to be a lot of energy, a lot of excitement, and also it is our first nonpartisan administration in Alaska history and the only nonpartisan governor in the United States right now. So it will be certainly one to remember.
After the ceremony, Hobson says Walker and Mallott will head to the third floor of the Capitol building to physically assume their offices. Walker plans to stay in the governor's mansion Monday night. Juneau is getting closer to becoming the third community in Alaska with a Housing First project to provide the chronically homeless with housing. Organizers told the Juneau Assembly on Monday the project is moving from the concept stage to the design stage. KTOO's Casey Kelly reports.
The Glory Hole Emergency Shelter and Soup Kitchen has taken the lead role in planning a Housing First project in the capital city. Scott Schombor is chair of the Alaska Coalition on Housing and Homelessness and one of the volunteers leading the effort to build the project.
Right now we are basically transitioning from kind of a theoretical project into an actual development of a project.
In recent decades, many communities have turned to the Housing First model to address chronic homelessness. The idea is that if you give people a permanent, stable place to live, it's easier to address why they're on the streets. Anchorage and Fairbanks have had success with Housing First projects, and the Juneau Group has been in the planning stages for about 2 years. In addition to the Glory Hole becoming the lead agency, Schombor said Tlingit and Haida Regional Housing Authority has offered several parcels of land, and Juneau-based MRV Architects has produced a series of conceptual drawings. Schombor said there are two things the city could provide to make the project a reality.
Community support plus community resources. You know, what real resources is the community providing to get an affordable housing project done?
On average, he said it takes 8 funding sources to build an affordable housing project. The municipality has an affordable housing fund, and Schombor said it could secure additional money from the state's Community Development Block Grant Program. The Housing First group is also hoping to set up a dedicated fund with the Juneau Community Foundation to raise money for the project. One potentially significant source of funding is the Special Needs Housing Grant Program from the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Glory Hole Executive Director Maria Lovishuk said the deadline to apply for one of those grants is February 20th.
You know, we will need to figure out the site by what point. We will need to figure out where most of the capital funding will come from.
Lovishuk said operating costs could total about $950,000 a year. The Assembly heard the project update as part of its annual retreat on Monday. Among the other topics, how to encourage more housing in general. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, warm fall temperatures allow Fairbanks to experiment with using salt on icy roads.
We had several calls from the troopers with accidents already, and as soon as we started putting this stuff down, those calls all went away.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com. And by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
The North Pole City Council is looking at increased sales taxes proposed by the mayor to cover a revenue shortfall. The public turned out in opposition to the tax increases at a city council meeting earlier this week. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Ward says North Pole must increase its sales tax from 4% to 4.5% to head off big cuts in services due to a looming revenue shortfall caused mainly by the prospect of a property tax cut for the Flint Hills, Alaska refinery, the biggest source of those revenues. The company shut down the facility last summer and now uses it as a fuel terminal. North Pole businessman Mike Gendro led off a lineup of area residents who say the proposal would make it even harder for businesses.
It's so hard to have a small business in this community because we're all at such a disadvantage because the other cities do not have sales tax.
Jeff Howe says the sales tax already discourages him from making purchases in the town he's lived in for 32 years.
I don't buy anything in North Pole. I'm in Fairbanks buying my gas. I go to dinner in Fairbanks. I do everything in Fairbanks now. I might get a soda every now and then at the Sourdough Fuel.
Tammy Wilson represents North Pole in the legislature, and she says council members should cut services instead of raising taxes because lower oil production and prices will force the state government to reduce funding to municipalities.
The state has no money. Okay, so revenue sharing, most likely, you'll be lucky if you get any because it's based on having so much money, having so much throughput. If you don't know that already, we have low throughput and we have low prices.
Council members responded by saying the sales tax hike is modest, and as Councilman Tom McGee pointed out, it was proposed after they crafted a no-frills budget for 2015.
We are not increasing any employees. We're barely maintaining what we have. We're not increasing any wages or fees.
In the end, the council decided against the tax hike and another proposal to raise the sales tax cap from $8 to $10 on purchases of $200 or more. The council did increase taxes on alcohol by 1% and tobacco by 2%. Ward said Tuesday the sales tax hike would have made it possible to hold down property taxes for North Pole's 2,200 residents by sharing the burden of raising revenue with the 20,000 or so people who live outside of town but who shop there and use its services.
So part of the sales tax is, you know, saying that the people that come in and use those services are the ones that pay for those services.
Ward says he's looking into some changes to the proposals when the ordinances come back before the council in next Monday's meeting for a final vote. Reporting from Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
Warmer than normal temperatures this fall allowed expanded use of salt to combat icy roads in Fairbanks. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, salt is more effective in some conditions and less expensive.
The State Department of Transportation began testing the application of a saltwater mix on Fairbanks roads 3 years ago. DOT Fairbanks Maintenance Superintendent Dan Schocker says the brine mixture is only effective on pavement that's 15 degrees Fahrenheit or warmer.
And we have had that, you know, numerous times here recently. So we keep putting forth an effort to use it where we can.
The state has two trucks set up to spray brine on roads, and they're focused on hills, curves, bridges, and intersections. Schocker says brine was especially effective early last week when rising temperatures resulted in a dangerous coating of frost on pavement.
We could have put down abrasives, and they'd have been gone with the first two or three cars. There's nothing there to hold it. So we had the opportunity to use this. We had several calls from the troopers with accidents already, and as soon as we started putting this stuff down, those calls all went away.
Schocker additionally praises brine for being less expensive than sand and gravel, plus cheaper maintenance-wise.
This is something we don't have to clean up later. It basically evaporates and it's gone.
The 23% salt solution being applied to roads also includes an organic compound. Schocker says it helps salt stick to pavement and combats corrosion. Local auto mechanic Steve Levy ties the application of salt to roads with an increase in corrosion-related vehicle problems.
This year and last year is when we're starting to see the impact of salt damage on cars in the repair process. When we need to take apart a hub assembly or replace a wheel bearing on a car, we're having to cut bolts and then cut out bushings and replace bushings, which, you know, doubles and triples the cost of repairs.
Levy recommends washing vehicles often to remove salt.
You got to get underneath the car and you've got to get around the wheels on the inside of the wheels. That's where where most of the expense is going is in the strut areas, in the hub area on the inside, brake parts. I don't know how much you can do about the exhaust parts, but the more fresh water you get to rinse things down, the better.
The state shocker contests how big an issue road salt is for vehicles in Fairbanks because of its very limited use here. He says about 30,000 gallons of brine have been spread on local roads this fall, a fraction of the hundreds of thousands of gallons used monthly in some lower 48 cities. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Nearly 500 Alaskans are trying to write an entire novel this month. They're participating in November National Novel Writing Month, a worldwide movement aimed at getting people writing. KSKA's Ann Hillman spoke to some of the participants gathered recently at Anchorage's Lusac Public Library.
For the most part, the room of writers at the library is pretty quiet. Teens and adults holding laptops and tablets sit at tables and lounge on the bench, occasionally chatting. Except for Abby Foster is plunking away at her novel on an actual typewriter she calls Gus. This is the seventh time she's participated in National Novel Writing Month, affectionately called NaNoWriMo. She says Gus helped her surpass her goal of writing 50,000 words this month.
It gets rid of the inner editor when I'm using it, so I can just keep typing. And there's no delete key.
Foster volunteers with the nonprofit called NaNoWriMo, which runs the novel writing competition and coordinates events like the write-ins at the library. She says it takes a lot of things to get people through the process.
A little bit of craziness. A lot of people swear by caffeine. I swear by chocolate. But probably the best thing to have if you want to do a novel in a month is support.
Part of Foster's role is to provide support to a group of teens she's been volunteering with through different youth writing groups. One of those teens is high school senior Zach Butch. He's working on a graphic novel about the unplanned misadventures of four goofy friends trying to save an artifact from a corrupt government. He's a little sensitive about his progress.
Are you trying to insinuate that I haven't been keeping up with my word count at all?
Butch admits he hasn't been, but that's not his goal. He says he's working hard on a project he put aside when he was 14, and he's having fun doing it. Eighth grader Max Kletchner takes his 20,000 word count more seriously since he signed a contract with himself to do it. He says he's almost finished writing his novel about a boy who is writing a novel. It's like a book within a book.
There are quite a few parts where it's funny, it's heartfelt.
Kletchner offers solid advice for people pursuing writing.
Put your work into sections, maybe words a day, words a week. Like, for some people that are really have a bunch of ideas just going through their head and then they disappear quickly, you should really write them down.
Lana Terry, who has already published several novels, says the great thing about NaNoWriMo is that you have a support group and it forces you to just write.
I think when I'm writing by myself, it's fairly easy to daydream or wander or say, hey, I'm going to go research this. When you're doing it and paying attention to the word count and the time frame, you just get it out.
The program started in 1999. So far this month, Alaskan participants have written nearly 7.8 million words. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
First National Bank Alaska, who believes that success isn't simply having an idea, it is knowing the right lender to help bring it to life. More at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
And by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future. Delivering oil today, sustaining operations for tomorrow. Alaska Children's Trust, working to prevent child abuse and neglect by encouraging all Alaskans to take small steps that can make a big difference in the lives of Alaska's children. Information at alaskachildrenstrust.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Children's Trust.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
You're listening to AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, Amazon in the Arctic. Black Friday kicks off the rush of holiday shopping, and it's also given rise to a fraternal twin of sorts, Cyber Monday. But there's one place you might not expect online retail to be turning into a fact of life, Bush, Alaska.
High freight costs have long been a fact of life in communities off the road system, but in the last few years, e-commerce sites have started treating rural areas as a potential market. KSKA's Zachariah Hughes has the story.
Betsy Brennan unpacks a box at KNOM, the radio station where she works in Nome.
We're good for a couple weeks, maybe.
Inside are a few dozen rolls of toilet paper from online retail giant Amazon.com. Brennan has an auto order set up through the company's Prime service so that every few weeks, office essentials like paper towels, printer cartridges, and coffee arrive. Because of the free shipping that comes with the annual $99 subscription fee, Amazon Prime's popularity is exploding in Bush, Alaska. Brennan set up her household's Prime account about 2 years ago and uses it for many of the things you could easily take for granted if you live in a place with road access.
We recently ordered 6 or 7 30-pound bags of soil, potting soil and planting soil.
Rural customers have always looked for loopholes to save money on supplies and shipping. In the recent past, Brennan's family put in bulk orders through Costco or Sam's Club. But Prime's flat fee means weight is no longer a financial factor.
We had a friend that ordered a wood splitter through Amazon Prime, a fairly heavy item.
Nome is a regional hub, with more commercial and passenger flights moving through than any of the surrounding communities. Amazon isn't getting into the business of shipping itself. They're just taking advantage of where providers like UPS and the Postal Service already go, expanding their reach into markets where e-commerce hasn't had much of a foothold.
The shipping often for those of us in Bush, Alaska is as expensive almost as the item itself.
Jeff Erickson lives in Unalakleet, about a 45-minute flight from Nome. He has been taking advantage of Amazon's shipping perks for 5 or 6 years. Recently, he was shopping for a new mattress, fully prepared to bite the hundreds of dollars in shipping it costs. But then he found one eligible under Prime.
3 days later, I hear somebody struggling up my stairs, and it's the UPS boy who's dropping it off.
The box was smaller than Erickson expected, and he figured he'd mistakenly ordered a memory foam pad, albeit a very heavy one. But once he opened up the packaging inside his bedroom, he got another surprise. Vacuum sealed inside a plastic pouch.
Got my knife out, made a tiny split in it, and all of a sudden I had an instant California king-size mattress that exploded in my face and sprung out. And a half hour later, it was an actual California king-size mattress laying on my bed.
Both Erickson and Brennan were reluctant to go into depth about just how much they use Amazon Prime. They're worried the company might catch on. Amazon didn't respond to multiple requests for comment, but RJ Hotovy, a senior e-commerce analyst for Morningstar, did.
I would be very surprised if they weren't aware that this was going on.
Hotovy thinks the company's decided it's worth losing money right now, shipping wood splitters and mattresses, if it means recruiting new users in the long term.
I think it's important for Amazon right now to really focus on building its customer base and, you know, expanding its ecosystem and, frankly, just giving consumers more of a reason to shop with Amazon and less of a reason to shop anywhere else.
Prime isn't replacing Unalakleet's two local stores, but Erickson says there are a lot of items, staples like flour, for example, that just aren't economical to get in town if you have the money to front buying in bulk. He estimates without shipping costs, he's increased his buying power about 30%, not counting all the time and hassle he used to have to set aside filling up totes on visits to Anchorage. Amazon's also been willing to lose money on shipping if it can nudge customers into using ancillary services like music and video streaming, something Erickson says isn't feasible in the Bering Strait region.
We just suffer with bandwidth and speed issues out here, so I think at this point, we're using Amazon Prime for the free shipping.
For the holiday shoppers out there eager to get the most bang for their buck, I recommend gifting the Jet 20x80 geared head engine lathe. Yes, it may cost $25,000 and weigh 4 tons, but the price for having it shipped to your door if you're a Prime member? Zero. For AK, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week we're heading to Nanapachuk, a city of about 450 people near Bethel.
This is Frank Sui. I'm in planning and zoning. That's a land planner for the city of Nanapachuk. It started out back in the 30s, if not the 40s. There used to be a little village west of us. The first village was occupied. People had came to this spot, and they called it Nunavichok, and that would mean small land. And from there, it started growing to the population to this time. There's open gyms, basketball tournaments from different entities. There's snow machine riding. There's also dog mushing, and there's annual Blackberry Festival. And there's another one that's called Salmon Berry Festival going on in July. Not much of a tourism. There's three entities here. The native village of Nunavichok City and Nunavichok Limited. That's the our corporation. They have local employment. And sometimes when construction comes to our village, other companies come here for people sign up for the works there. I'd say, from my point of view, but cultural, it's still here. But technological advancement is slowly taking over.
Frank Sumi works for the Planning and Zoning Office in the city of Nunavichok. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. If you want to hear your community featured, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Zachariah Hughes, Ashley Snyder, and Annie Fite. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Jeremy Shea and Casey Kelly in Juneau, Tim Ellis in Delta, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Ann Hillman in Anchorage. APRN's Liz Ruskin reported from Washington, D.C. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Pat Yak is our web producer. And I'm Annie Fite.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Nana Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine. Salmon are all around us. They're in our rivers and our freezers. They fuel our economies and keep Alaskans connected to our traditions, our families, and our friends. The Salmon Project celebrates all the ways salmon are interwoven with our Alaskan lives. Learn more about the project and find out how you can be involved at salmonproject.org or find them on Facebook. Salmon, it runs deep in all Alaskans. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project. You've heard of Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, and Cyber Monday. Well, now you're hearing about Giving Tuesday, a day to kick off the season of giving back on Tuesday, December the 2nd. Celebrate the season of giving with Alaska Public Media and the Alaska Community Foundation on Tuesday, December the 2nd, by giving a gift to the cause you care about most. When you live and give in Alaska, you make a real difference in your home community.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.